every family has at least one recipe that is dear to them, and making that cherished recipe can connect us to those who came before us. Sarah Peterson grew up in Cloquet. She has a new cookbook coming out. It's called Dish and Tell, Recipes from the Heart. It's from the Minnesota Historical Society Press, where each recipe tells a story. Sarah's joining us now, along with our good friend Amy Thielen, host of Ham Radio. Sarah, Amy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. This is so exciting. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to be here to help promote your book.
So,
it's so fun to be on the airwaves up in northern Minnesota, a place that's near and dear to my heart. So thank you so much.
Yeah, your book starts with in some nice descriptions of all the important cooks in your life, like your great aunt. Is it Edie? And
yes, Aunt Edie. Yep. She was from Cass Lake and later Bemidji.
And your grandma's, even your husband's grandma, who you didn't get to meet. Why was it important to you to tell us about all these people at the start of your book?
Well, because I reference a lot of their recipes, and a lot of my food memories come from these women. And I just wanted to pay tribute to the women that really influenced our family's food traditions. I call them the keepers. You know, we all have these keepers in our family. They're often our mothers, our grandmothers, the matriarchs of our family, the ones that pass on the recipes to the next generation. And I really just wanted to share a little bit about each of them. Yes. And so I have these bios about them and tell a little bit about who they were and some of their Hall of Fame dishes in the upfront of the book.
I was seeing if Amy, she might be frozen there. You know, I wonder, Sarah, if you don't mind kind of getting into, I was really connected to, because this happened in my life too, when my dad was sick, and how much food meant to everybody in the family at that time when we were all together for him. You talk about that of kind of that changing roles too. So many people do this where the child has to be more of a caretaker. What did food mean at that time when your dad had cancer?
Exactly. It was such a challenging time. As I started to write the book, my dad was in late stage pancreatic cancer, which is really, really hard. And I found myself having to spend more time with my family, driving up north. They were in Cloquet at the time, and just really taking care of my parents, driving them to appointments. My mom was still cooking a lot for my dad, but I started to bring all his favorite dishes, everything kind of centered around food, anything that would make him happy and comfortable. So we had a lot of meals together at their dining room table at their house. I'd bring special treats, and I really just started to see like the power of food. You know, my mom paid such attention to whatever my dad needed, what he was craving that day. It could be something really humble, like, you know, a hot dish, or it could be something, a restaurant meal, but we always just tried to make him comfortable. And I saw the power of food in making people feel cared for, and just how it can bring comfort in a really challenging time.
So when did you start working on this book? Like, what is the genesis of that, of this whole process? And when did you, you know, how long did it take you to get to a point where I want to really do this?
Yes. So I had started blogging back in 2019, really just wanted to capture some of my family's recipes and tell the stories of my grandmothers and my aunts. And I really love nostalgia. I love handwritten recipe cards. I love vintage dishes. And it was just a way to tie it all together. So I started blogging, used that to find my voice. And the idea of a book started percolating. And my dad really pushed me to pursue it as a book. And I was like, yeah, I think these stories deserve to live longer. You know, things on the internet, it's just so fast paced, and then they're gone. You know, you write a really good story and you don't know who's seeing it or how long it's going to live on. And I wanted it to live on in a book. And as I started to talk to other families and I saw their pride and their family recipes, I really wanted to honor them and pay tribute to them and their stories in a book. And so I pitched it to the Minnesota Historical Society. It was back in like 2023. And they agreed to do it, and I'm just so tickled that it's finally done and out there. It's coming out next week.
You know, Amy, we all, the three of us here, got a chance to look at it early, which was really thrilling. What's stands out to you about what you're seeing about what Sarah's done with stories and the recipes in there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in like how do we tell stories from kind of an inside family perspective and then also to the outside world. And I think I just think some of those stories of your grandma especially are, I think you have that perspective from inside and outside. And I mean, because I've done some of that as well, like, you know, talked about my own family and that kind of thing. I just wonder what was that experience like for you when you feel like there's a heavy weight of responsibility to like, oh, I'm writing down my grandmother's, you know, story about something and it, you know, would she like it? Is my family going to like it? That kind of thing. Like, how do I, you know, translate my family and make it universal? And I think you did that. There are some moments that really strike me that you just kind of hit at this very universal, lack of a better word, Midwesternness. So, yeah, I'm thinking, like, what is your relationship to Midwesternness at this point, having gone through this project and, you know, really dug into some of these older things? And which eras or which things do you feel like have been overlooked in the past?
Well, first of all, I'll just say that after going through this process, I am more proud than ever to be from the Midwest and from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yes. I always have been a super proud Minnesotan, and I think that really played a part in me wanting to write this book and highlight these stories, which all have a connection to Minnesota. So this, I should say that each story in this book, they're tied to our grandmothers, our mothers, but they're also very much tied to our state. I think, yeah, I'm just super proud of it. I don't know if there's one aspect that I think was overlooked, but I think something that's kind of interesting that comes up a lot is that, you know, some of our most treasured favorite recipes, the tried and true ones that our grandmas made, aren't very complicated. You know, they're unfussy. And I have a section in the upfront of the book that talks about these Midwest powerhouse ingredients, which might make some people cringe, right? Like Jell-O, cake mixes, a can of condensed soup. But I kind of feel like there's no shame in using these shortcuts and things that do have a role in some really great home cooking. A lot of home cooks of, you know, earlier generations relied on these products. And so I think that was kind of funny. Those products came up over and over again, you know, top the tater, things like that, that are so Midwestern, but so beloved here.
You know, Sarah.
Affordable. Just want to
yes,
say.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So you have recipes from other people in there. It's not just your family. I want to make sure we kind of talk about that, because I saw for years, someone we had on the air with us was Mona Abel. And she and her pasty recipe are in there. Mona Abel, who wrote a couple cookbooks. She was also a former go-go dancer, is how she described herself, from Hibbing, and kept the tradition of the, I think it was the Methodist Church in Hibbing, where they made pasties once a month in the basement, and kept the tradition going. Can you tell us this, maybe Mona and her sister Patty, but also how'd you gather all of this?
Well, that's the thing. Like, so this cookbook has a lot of recipes from my own recipe box, but I really wanted to tap other Minnesotans about their favorite recipes. So I talked to friends, I talked to neighbors, I talked to neighbors' friends, put the call out on social media. I really wanted it to have that community cookbook aspect, which I know we all love. Mona's recipe came to me. I was camping up at McCarthy State Beach at the state park there, and they were selling her cookbook at the state park office, or one of her cookbooks. Mm-hmm. I think it was her last one. And I just fell in love with her storytelling. She sounded like such a character. I'm like, I have to meet this lady. And I was so sad to learn that she had passed away. But as I was flipping through the cookbook, I saw somebody I knew in one of the pictures, somebody I knew from the Twin Cities who grew up on the Iron Range, got in touch with her. She put me in touch with Mona's family, her sister Patty. And I'm like, I have to include her pasty recipe. I really wanted a pasty recipe in the cookbook. And then the more I learned about Mona, I was just so smitten by her and what a character. And I'm so jealous. I didn't know her when she was around and I didn't get to hear her on your airwaves. I mean, I think they should make a movie about Mona and her life.
Oh, they definitely should. And I will send you something. I actually got to go to that and make a little audio story and meet the people that were making it. And I got myself right in the thick of the, argument of ketchup versus gravy. And that was not easy, I'm telling you.
Oh, ketchup versus gravy. How? I mean, how do you even defend the ketchup side is my question.
Ooh, that's no? Titan's words, Elin.
Heidi, I don't know. Sarah?
I don't even want to get into that. Yep.
I want to get into, you've got the Juicy Lucy tater tot hot dish in there that you submitted at the state fair. I can't believe it only got third. I don't wonder what the other, you know, two top two were. But can you tell us a little bit about this recipe and how it came about?
Yes. So this is, I'm so proud of this recipe because it's really one of the only recipes I've created. You know, I like to make other people's recipes and get inspiration from others. This recipe, it was part of a contest at the state fair. You had to use Minnesota ingredients to come up with a hot dish. We all know the Juicy Lucy has a long history here in Minnesota. It's the cheeseburger with the cheese in the middle that kind of squirts out. And I'm like, this would make a really great hot dish. So it's just, you know, layers of ground beef with a thick layer of cheese in the middle, more ground beef, tater tots, and don't forget the pickles. There's pickles too. That kind of makes the dish. And then the binder, you know, it's not a can of condensed soup with this. I used, I made the binder for the hot dish from scratch using beer. And it just has a really good flavor. And yeah, got third place at the state fair, which is super fun. And I have a daughter named Lucy who helped me taste test. So I kind of pay tribute to her in the story that's in the cookbook as well.
All right, Amy, so there's tater tots on top. So some people might want to dip it in ketchup. How do we feel?
I don't know. I'm kind of anti ketchup. I hate to say that, I do think that, you know, I just don't even, I mean, this is, I'm going to have to bring that to us like a real session on its own, but okay. I like potatoes and ketchup. I like potatoes and ketchup. I just don't know about like dough as much. Like, I just think the gravy is so good with the pasty. Like, I don't know why you would do anything else, I guess. That's where I stand.
Okay.
All right. I'm with you on a pasty. I think putting ketchup on a pasty, you know, that would be tough. But I don't do gravy either. I just like them plain Jane, salt and pepper. Let that rutabaga come out, that flavor.
See, you're so Minnesotan, Sarah. I just love that rutabaga. I love it too.
That's very controversial not even like, too in a pasty.
It's not even, that's not even like a, you're dating yourself to not even like this generation, but I, you know, that's kind of an older Minnesota thing is to, my neighbors, when we first moved here to Two Inlets, one of my neighbors referred to them as beggies. And she said they used to keep them under their beds
really?
In the winter, you know?
Yeah. My grandpa always said
as a storage.
Yeah.
But that's the baggie, you got that too?
Yeah, rutabaga.
So what's controversial about the rutabaga?
Well, it seems like, you know, as I was talking to people when I was trying to collect a pasty recipe, people were very like anti-rutabaga or they were very pro for it. And I wanted a recipe with it because that's the way I grew up eating them. And that's, I love the flavor. I think that's what kind of makes it for me. I can't imagine, I don't know another dish where I eat rutabaga, but I love a pasty with that. Yeah. And I just found that some people were very much like, no, they don't put that in there. And I'm like, well, that's just not right. I don't know what that would taste like.
Yeah. I love that you have the saltine cracker crusted fish.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a simple recipe, but so good. And I come from a family of fishermen. My brother, Jared, I give him credit for the recipe in the book, but we attribute it in the story. We mentioned how my grandma was really the one that started that. And up in Bemidji, probably fishing on Leech Lake and Cass Lake, in that area, they would always go walleye fishing and she had just the simplest batter just with, you know, the saltine crackers and it was perfection. So good.
So, the book also gives some advice on how we can be like the keepers, the tradition keepers, and offer some fun ideas. Can you tell us about some of those things that we can be doing to, help, you know, be the people in someone else's life that are the keepers?
Yeah, so I just really wanted the book to inspire people, families, to talk about their treasured recipes. And, you know, if you have a grandma that makes like cookies that are out of this world. Talk to her about that recipe, make them with her together, because what a great way to spend time together and make sure that you have that recipe, or whatever the dish may be. And then if you are the person in your family that is passing on these traditions and recipes, just to make sure to talk about them, to connect with your family, invite them over to the kitchen to make them with you. I think that's one of my biggest regrets, is like that I didn't cook with my grandmothers when I had the chance, or not as much as I would have liked to. And in this process, in collecting stories, it's encouraged other families to get together and make some of the recipes. There's a recipe in the book for Poppykuchen, which it's like a German coffee cake. And I know Amy knows what it is because she has one that's kind of similar in one of, in her first cookbook. But yeah, this family, they, through this process, they all got together with their grandma who had been making it for years, but they'd never made it together as a family. But they got together with their grandma and their extended family. They made it. They had so much fun in that process. Their grandma pulled out her old recipe box, her recipe books. They really just had this nice family moment, and now they've made it a tradition. So they're getting together every year to make Poppykuchen around the holidays together. And that's just what I really hope other families will take from this book, is to spend that time in the kitchen together, bonding over family recipes and food traditions.
Yeah, my over things.
You have, go ahead. Okay. Sorry.
I was just going to say, over Thanksgiving, my son, who's 19, and I and my mom, we made Swedish thin bread together in the kitchen, which is something we've, you know, been eating for years, but we never were involved in making it. And she took the time to say, this is how you do it. It's not hard. Let me just show you. It was really meaningful.
You always learn something more when you do it together, like that you don't pick up in a written recipe. I know cooking with my own mom, there were things that she would do in the kitchen, like when we'd make her Italian shells, she would take the spices and like grind them up in her hands before she put them in a dish, or just like little things like that that make a difference in the final recipe that maybe she hadn't written down, but seeing her and being with her in the kitchen, seeing her do these actions, it was just really a sweet moment and made the difference in the final dish.
I think that's a bit of a generational thing too, don't you think? Like, you know, the length of recipes, how long they were written was, you know, if you go back to the 50s, the 60s, even the 70s and 80s, they're very short in kind of in a way that's like, it's easy, just throw it in the oven. So it's good that I can see that you like went and you incorporated all those visual cues that you saw into those recipes. And I mean, that's how you can modernize it, because my mom too would just leave out. She would never say, oh, I did this with my hands, or, you know, you have to really watch, you know?
Exactly. And then something else we found with a couple of the recipes that came from grandmas or great grandmas, they might've been missing ingredients or critical steps. And in the case of the Poppykuchen, my friend Katie told me that her grandma or great grandma, when she would share the recipe, she would do that on purpose so that it wouldn't turn out for other people. And so we had to do a little bit of sleuthing to figure out the exact recipe to put in the cookbook, because it wasn't in her grandma's notes.
We just got a text in from Tim Urkla in Maple Grove. He said, I love to add gravy and shredded cheese to my pasties. I'm not normally enthusiastic about baggies, but the pasties must have baggies. So good. Thanks, Tim. Good to hear from you today. Well, we're almost out of time. Amy, anything else you want to add about, there's so much similarity between your work and what Sarah's done here with her new cookbook.
Yeah, I love that. I am also very nostalgic. So that's why I find myself having questions for you. Like, how did you go through that process? You know? And I also am thinking about, in particular, like how beautiful this book is, and the photographs and the scenes, you know, and you have so many important pieces of equipment that's not a small thing, you know, like they're very, sometimes the equipment or the dish or the implement is just as important. You know, sometimes you can't make something without it. And I just wonder, like, what are some of your favorite things? And like, really honestly, how big is your pantry? because you must have just a huge collection of stuff. And you're probably the keeper of a lot of family heirlooms, is my guess.
You are totally right. I have taken on a lot of equipment and dishes, which I love, from my grandmothers, my husband's grandparents, my parents who had to downsize. So I do have a lot, but I don't know that anything, you know, anything in this cookbook, it doesn't require things that people probably don't have in their kitchen or couldn't make right. do with what they have. But I do love also going to vintage shops and finding fun implements. Like I have a potato ricer. I have a couple of vintage ones. I don't always use them, but I find them kind of fun to use when I have to mash potatoes or make lefse. Just like different spatulas. I love old mixing bowls, just everything. I'm drawn to it for how it looks, but I do use these things too, except for vintage nut grinders. I have a collection of those that for whatever reason, they don't work very well. And it's just so much more, it's easier to just crack up nuts with a back of a rolling pin in my mind. But yeah, so some of the things I don't use and I just have on display.
You know, they're so pretty though.
They are so cute.
Yeah. We just heard from Daryl in Tamarack. He says, I'm enjoying your cooking show. It reminds me of working with tools with my dad and watching my uncle at his lathe. Many of my tools are handed down. And when I pick up a wrench, I think about the hands before. All right, Daryl, making us cry here this morning. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, really, isn't it? Like, I feel like when I'm holding a recipe card that is written by my grandma or my husband's grandma or using my grandma's mixing bowls, it's really just like that connection to the past and the memories that makes it so special.
That is Sarah Peterson. Her new book is Dish and Tell, Recipes from the Heart. It'll be available this Tuesday, February 17th, and there is a launch party at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul this Saturday, or a week from Saturday, February 21st, from 2 to 3:30. And Amy Thielen of her cookbooks company and New Midwestern Table, and of course, Ham Radio, which will be coming back this spring. Sarah, Amy, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you so much.
This was so much fun.